Yes, well, I've had a lot more I was going to say here before I got into another dialogue with you.
Go ahead, say it.
Excuse me, but it's sort of hard to ignore you. I mean, once you're here, it's difficult to pretend that you're not. It's like that stockbroker who speaks and everybody listens. Now that you've opened up the dialogue, who wants to hear from me?
A lot of people do. Probably everybody does. They want to hear how it's been for you. They want to know what you've learned. Don't retreat just because I've shown up. That's the problem with so many people. God shows up and they think they have to get smaller. They think they have to humble themselves.
We aren't supposed to humble ourselves in the presence of God?
I have not come to humble you, but to exalt you.
You have?
When you are exalted, so too am I. And when you are humbled, so too am I. There is only one of us. You and I are one.
Yes, well, that's what I was getting to. I was going there.
So go. Don't let me stop you. Tell the people listening to this all about your experience. They do want to know about that. You were right about that. As people get to know you, they get to know themselves. They'll see themselves in you. And if they see that in you
is me, then they'll see that I am in them as well. And this will be a great gift. So go ahead with your story.
Well, I was saying that every cell of my body seemed to be shaking, vibrating, oscillating. I was trembling, a wonderful tremble of excitement. And a tear dropped out of my eye, made its way down my cheek, salted my tongue as I licked it from my beard. I was having that feeling again. I thought I would overflow from the inside out with love. I couldn't write another word for the acknowledgments. I had to do something with what I was just given. I wanted to begin writing friendship with God right then and there. Hey, you can't do that, my mind admonished. You haven't even written book three yet. Book three, of course, refers to the third installment of the Conversations with God trilogy. I knew I had to finish the trilogy before I dared start another project. Still, I wanted to do something with the energy that was coursing through my veins. So I decided to call my editor at my other publishers, the Putnam Publishing Group in New York. You're not going to believe this, I blurted out when she answered the phone, but I've just been given the subject of two more books and a command to write them.
I never command anyone to do anything.
Well, I think I used the word command with my editor. Maybe I should have said, and the inspiration to write them.
That would have been a better word, a more accurate word.
Well, I was so excited I wasn't watching every word I used, measuring them for accuracy.
I understand. Yet this is precisely the kind of thing that has, through the years, created a false impression about me. I've come here now to correct that impression. I've come to tell you what it's like to have a true friendship with God, and how you can have one.
I'm excited all over again. Begin.
Finish your story.
Who wants to hear about that? I want to hear about this.
Finish your story. It has relevance, and it will bring us to the present day.
Well, I told my editor just what you told me about the next two books, and she flipped. I asked her if she thought Putnam would be interested in publishing them. Are you kidding? Of course we would, she said, adding that she'd like me to write up a little summary of what I'd just told her. I faxed something the next day, and the company very kindly gave me a two-book contract.
Why didn't you just put the books on the Internet?
What?
Why didn't you make them available for free?
Why are you asking me this?
Because it's what many people want to know. Did the publishers offer you a lot of money?
Well, yes.
Why did you agree to take it? If you were a man of God, you would agree to share this information with the world at no charge. You wouldn't run around signing multi-book contracts. Isn't that what some people are saying?
Exactly. They are saying that. They're saying that I'm in it for the money.
Well,
I'm not in it for the money, but there's no reason not to take it.
A man of God would not do it.
He wouldn't? Don't priests take salaries? Don't rabbis eat?
Yes, but not very much. Teachers of God live in poverty. They don't demand a fortune for sharing simple truth.
I didn't demand a fortune. I didn't demand anything. I was offered it.
You should have turned it down.
Why? Who says that money is bad? If I have a chance to earn a great deal of money by sharing eternal truth, why shouldn't I? Besides, what if I had dreams of doing extraordinary things with some of it? What if I had dreams of setting up and funding a non-profit foundation that would carry your message around the world? What if I had dreams of making the lives of others better?
That might help a bit. That might make me not so mad.
And what if I simply gave a great deal of it away? What if I helped others in need?
That would also help. We could understand. We could begin to accept. But you yourself should live very modestly. You should not spend it on yourself.
I shouldn't. I shouldn't celebrate who I am. I shouldn't live in magnificence, have a beautiful home, drive a new car.
No. Neither should you have fancy clothes, nor eat in expensive restaurants, nor buy luxurious things. You should give all the money to the poor. Live as if it doesn't matter.
But that's how I do live. I live as if money doesn't matter. I spend it freely, give it away easily, share it generously, and act actually just that way, as if it doesn't matter. When I see something expensive that I'd like to have or do, I act as if the money doesn't matter. And when my heart calls out to me to assist another or do something magnificent in the world, I also act as if the money doesn't matter.
You keep acting that way with your money and you're going to lose it all.
You mean use it all? You can't lose money, you can only use it. Money that is used is not lost. Somebody has it. It hasn't disappeared. The question is, who has it? If it went to people who sold me things or did things for me that I wanted done, how did I lose anything? And if it goes to doing good works or meeting the needs of others, where's the loss in that?
But if you don't hold on to it, you won't have any left.
I don't hold on to anything I have. I've learned that it's when I hold on to something that I lose it. If I hold on to love, I might as well not have any. If I hold on to money, it's worthless. The only way to have the experience of having anything is to give it away. Then, and only then, can you know that you have it.
You've escaped my larger point with your neat verbal gymnastics.
You've sidestepped the issue entirely. But I'm not going to let you get away with it. I'm going to drag you back. The point is that people who teach the real word of God do not and should not do it for money.
Who told you that?
You did.
I did?
Yes, you did. All your life you've told me that, until you wrote these books and made lots of money. What made you change?
You did.
I did?
You did. You told me that money was not the root of all evil, though I might decide that the misuse of it was. You told me that life was created for us to enjoy, and that it was okay to do that, more than okay. You told me that money was no different from anything else in life, that it was all God's energy. You told me there was nowhere that you are not, that you are expressed in, around, and through everything. Indeed, that you are everything, the all in all, and that includes money. You told me that all my life I had held an inaccurate view about money, that I'd made it wrong, dirty, unworthy, and that when I did this, I was making God wrong, dirty, and unworthy, because money is part of who you are. You told me that I had created an interesting life philosophy in which money was bad and love was good. Therefore, the more loving or important to society a thing was, the less money I or anyone else should make from it. In this, you told me, half the world has it backwards. We pay our strippers and our first basemen unfathomable sums to do what they do, while our scientists who search for a cure for AIDS, and the teachers in the classrooms with our children, and the ministers and rabbis and priests who look after our souls, live on bread and water. You told me that this created an upside-down world in which the things we value most receive the least reward. And you told me that not only did this not work, if we really want to create the world we say we want to create, but that it was not even necessary, because it was not your will at all. You told me that your will was that every human being live luxuriously, that there was nothing wrong with luxury, and that our only problem here on earth is that we haven't yet learned how to share it, even after all these thousands of years. You also made it clear that I don't teach the world anything about the real truth of money by shunning it. I only encourage the world's dysfunction by modeling that dysfunction myself. You said it would be a far more powerful teaching if I joyfully accepted money, and indeed all good things in life, and joyfully shared these things as well.
I told you these things?
Yes, without equivocation.
And you believed me?
I sure did. In fact, these new beliefs changed my life.
Good. That's very good. You've learned well, my son. You have heard well, and you have learned well.
I knew it. You were just testing me. I knew that you just wanted to see how I would answer those questions.
Yes, but now I have more questions for you.
Oh, boy.
Why should people have to pay for this message? Forget about why you think it's okay for you to receive money for it. Why should people have to give money for it? Shouldn't the Word of God be free for all? Why not just put it on the Internet?
Because people are jamming the Internet night and day with thousands of words telling people about their beliefs and why others should adopt them. Have you surfed the web lately? There's no end to it. We've opened a Pandora's box. Can you imagine how many people would pay attention had I jumped on the Internet when all this began to announce that I was having conversations with God? I mean, do you really think that would have been news on the Internet? Excuse me.
Okay, but now your books have become very popular. Everyone knows about them. Why not put them on the Internet now?
The reason people know that the CWG books have value is because other people have given something they value for them. It's the value that people have placed in them which causes them to have the value they have. All of life is people doing good things for another. That's all any of us are doing here. We're just offering the world our goods. When the world agrees that what we offer is worthwhile, whether it's fixing plumbing, baking bread, healing others, or teaching truth, the world says it is valuable, that is, able to have value. If we give a thing of value by offering in exchange something of value which is ours, we not only receive the value we give, we make that thing at once more valuable for the others to have as well. And so others are drawn to it, for people will always seek to bring value to their lives. Our system of commerce allows us to determine what is valuable and what is not. It's not a perfect system, okay? Nor are our decisions about what to value. But this imperfect system is what we've got right now, and I'm working within the system to change it.
What about poor people who can't afford your books?
You know, there are books in nearly every home in this country. It's not a question of whether there are books, but of which books are there. Conversations with God may be found, furthermore, at virtually every library. And it's made available through a Books for Friends program to people who are in prisons and to others in need. So I'm not getting here that the material is not available. It's been translated into many languages, and people are finding their way to it throughout the world. From Hong Kong to Tel Aviv, from Poland to Japan, Berlin to Boston, people are reading it, studying it in groups, and sharing it with others. I will acknowledge, however, that these have been tough questions for me. This whole issue of money in my life and of what is appropriate to have and to do has plagued me for decades. As you've said, in this I'm no different from most of the human race. Every day there's a part of me that thinks I should denounce the fame, denounce the financial abundance, and every other reward the Conversations with God trilogy has brought me. There's a huge part of me that just wants to wear a hair shirt, live in a hovel, and accept nothing of the world's goods for whatever good I've given the world. My idea is that this would somehow render it worthy. Do you see how insidious this is? I've set up a construction in which I ask other people to value that for which I will take nothing of value. Yet how can I expect others to value what I do not? Now that's not a question I ask myself. That's too deep for me, too close to the core issue. And what value do I place on myself if I believe I must suffer for others to see my value? Another core issue, another topic to ignore. But since you've raised the issue, I ask, is Ted Turner less valuable than Mother Teresa? Is George Soros less of a good person than Che Rivera? Are the politics of Jesse Jackson, who appears to have plenty of the good things in life, less worthy than the politics of Vaclav Havel, who may have less? Should the Pope, whose very garments cost more than it would take to feed a poor child for a year, have his words called blasphemy because he lives like a king as the head of a church which owns billions? Ted Turner and George Soros have given away millions of dollars. They've empowered the dreams of humanity with the rewards of their own dreams lived. Whoa. To empower the dreams of humanity with the living of our own dreams. What a magnificent idea. Jesse Jackson has brought hope to millions, with the hope that brought him to a place of great influence. The Pope has inspired people throughout the world, and would be no more inspirational to the world's Catholics, indeed conceivably a great deal less, were he to appear in rags. So I've come to terms with the fact that the CWG experience has brought me more of the good things in life, and given me more of the good things to share.
I want to point out here, however, that the publication of these books was not the cause of this happening. You put the cause into place before the books were published. In fact, that is why they were published and why they became so popular.
Yes, I see that that's true.
You can be sure that it is. Your life and your reality around money and all good things changed when you changed. They changed for you when you changed your mind about them.
Well, now you see, I thought you did that. I keep telling people that these books became popular because you wanted them to be. In fact, I'm kind of attracted to the idea that this was all the will of God.
Of course you are. That relieves you of responsibility for it, and furthermore gives the whole thing higher credential. So I hate to burst your bubble here, but this was not my idea.
It wasn't?
No, it was yours.
Oh, great. So now I can't even say I was inspired by God. But what about this very book I'm writing? You came to me and told me to do this.
Okay. This is as good a place as any to start our discussion on how to have a friendship with God. If you and I are to have a true friendship, a working friendship, and not just a friendship in theory...
That's important. Let's just stop here and make that distinction, because that's an important distinction. Many people think that God is their friend, but they don't know how to use that friendship. They see it as a distant relationship, not a close one.
Many more people do not even think of me as a friend at all.
That's the sad part of it. Many people think of me as a parent, not a friend, and a harsh, cruel, demanding, angry parent at that. A father who will tolerate absolutely no failure in certain areas, such as, for instance, how to worship me. The minds of these people, I not only demand your worship, I demand it in a specific way. It is not enough that you come to me. You must come to me by a particular path. Should you come to me by another path, any other path, I will reject your love, ignore your entreaties, and indeed condemn you to hell.
Oh, boy, even though my search for you was sincere, my intent pure, and my understandings the best I could reach?
Even though. Yes, even though.